stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with pianist, composer, teacher, accompanist, musical director, and all-around great guy, Bobby Brader. Bobby has been a mainstay in the theater and musical community in Sarasota for years now, and he's getting ready to leave and increase his credentials and information and knowledge so that he can do even more with his music than he has done. And right before he leaves, he's leaving us with a splendid concert next week. And so in this interview, you will not only hear the story of what has become an obsession for Bobby, the creation of music, but also what he thinks about music and relationships and about the concert, and also you will hear some of his earliest compositions. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
The Lynn Show is about being all the things that you are. This may seem odd. How can we not be all the things we are? And yet, as a psychotherapist, I see over and over again people who are, well, the technical term, the clinical term is in denial for parts of themselves. From things that were natural to them, to skills, to attitudes, to ways of being, even ways of walking, you'll see people who shot up very quickly when they were young, and were teased about being too tall. Maybe a girl who got taller than all the boys, and who got teased about that, and who came to feel that her height was not something that she was proud of, something that made her literally stand out in a way she didn't want to stand out. And you'll see these women, when they've grown, they hunch, they lean, they don't stand up. Even when everybody has caught up to them, the impulse to deny their height is still there. They don't want to be all that they are. So this is just one example. There are hundreds of examples. You know, if you had a very spontaneous laugh, you laughed, a lot of things struck you funny. You had a really, really unique sense of humor. You were tickled by so much of what came your way in the world. But somebody, a parent, a sibling, a teacher, a peer, said something about your sense of humor and the fact that you laughed all the time that embarrassed you, that made you feel that there was something wrong with that. Of course, there's nothing wrong. Well, there's nothing wrong with being tall. There's nothing wrong with finding a lot of the world amusing. It would be better if more people did that. But if that happened to you, it's not hard to imagine that you grew into someone who didn't laugh so spontaneously, or who kept her amusement or his amusement to yourself. That maybe you are even thought of as dour and unfunny these days. So, as I said, you know, there are dozens and dozens of examples of this. It's person specific. So. Okay, the point of the Lynn Show is just this, that unfortunately, many of our childhoods leave us with the idea that something about us is unattractive, is ugly, is going to bring a consequence we really don't want. And as a result, we learn first to pretend we don't have it, and then to forget. It's just easier to forget. The bad news is that this happens to so many of us. So many of us are in denial for things that are integral to us, that belong to us, that we would do really well to have access to. The good news is it doesn't go away. It's still there. And it is completely possible to recover. Although it's not so simple as, you know, oh, I heard Lynn say, you know, I could recover my sense of humor and bing bang, here it is. That's not how it happens. Because when you start to try and recover what you have had to deny, all of the things that stopped you come back up and they need to be dealt with. That's what psychotherapy is about. And so if anything that I have said resonates with you, if anything that I've said sounds familiar, if you even suspect or wonder or curious about whether you have had to deny, hide something important about you, psychotherapy might be the way to go. It is one of the ways to discover, recover yourself. If you want to talk about that, you can go to my website, thelynnshow.com. That's thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. There's a button that you can click on that says email me, and you can email me a question, or you can ask to talk to me, or you can have me come to speak to your group or organization. On my website, there are also copies of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And also on my website are all the shows that I have ever done. If you want to listen to a show that you heard before or someone told you about, you go up on the website and put the name of the person who I've interviewed in the little search box. And when it comes up, you click on the icon of the microphone and it will play. And you can download it from there or from iTunes. Every show, including this one, every interview, including the one I'm about to play. And the one I'm about to play is with the delightful, wonderful, talented, insightful Bobby Brader. And Bobby's a perfect example of what I'm trying to do with The Lynn Show. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like, at least in their area of their work, that they are exactly who they say they are. They are everything that they say they are. And Bobby's story is particularly wonderful because, as you will hear, Bobby discovered his, quote, obsession, unquote, with music by accident. But even though he didn't go looking for it, when he saw it, heard it, felt it, he knew it was his. He knew it was him. And that's, of course, the point that I'm trying to make with the show, that one can be one's self. Anyway, Bobby tells it better than me. We're going to start off, before I play the interview, I'm going to play a piece of music from Bobby's earliest CD, the very first CD he made, with the very first music that he composed. You'll hear him talking about that. I'm going to play another cut from that CD after the interview. But so now here is Bobby Brader's Bobby Brader as composer and pianist, followed by his delightful interview. Here with Bobby Brader.
Hello.
Hello. The remarkable, amazing,
talented dear, Bobby Prater.
Now I'm blushing. Thank you.
I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And of course, I know that you make your living and actually your life with the art of music, the art of piano. How do you define yourself?
Technically, my main source of income is as a music instructor, as a piano instructor, music theory instructor, composition instructor, but primarily piano. However, that doesn't include, you know, various gigs, whether it be at a church or at a theater, music directing, things like that, a little bit of arranging here and there.
Everything that has to do with music.
Yes.
I always ask the same question, and that is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when you thought music, piano, singing, humming, any of that occurred to you, drew you, spoke to you?
I do. Well, I was accidentally put in advanced concert band in middle school.
Well, wait a minute. You must have already been playing.
No. No, it was a clerical error. Because I was an eighth grader, the office assumed he's had band before. Surely we're not going to put him into beginning band with sixth graders. He goes in this band. Well, I get put there, and for, you know, I remember all my friends making fun of me. Bobby's going to be in band! I was not your... I, of course, evolved into one, but I was not what you would call a band geek in middle school. So I go into band that day, and for some reason, I can't remember specifically why, but I couldn't switch out of the class for the first 2 weeks. I don't know what the deal was. They were doing something new with schedules. They didn't want to hear about how this was obviously a mistake.
Yeah.
So I started playing trumpet for a little bit because I remembered my grandfather playing. I remember.
Did they ask you? I mean, did they say, or you just, there was a room full of instruments, and you said, I mean, do you remember how you wound them?
Do you know what I asked to play first? What does any 13-year-old boy want to play? Drums.
All right.
And Mr. Jarvis, the director, looks back at me and says, I have 13 percussionists. You will not be number 14. What else would you like to play? Guess again. I ended up last chair trumpet. And I started to practice. I was not very good. I got very discouraged. I didn't take lessons. I just brought the horn home, and my dad gave me a few tips. My grandfather at the time, who was alive, came over and gave me some pointers. But I got very discouraged, and I wanted to quit. So when it came to that Sunday evening before going back to school, my parents said, okay, you can quit. You've given it a shot, practice, whatever. You can quit. Well, the next day, I was going to quit at the end of that class period. The band director puts me on the spot in front of everybody. He makes me play our concert B-flat scale in front of everybody. And I couldn't believe it. I said, you're going to call up the new guy and make me play. Well, I don't know. An angel descended and climbed into the horn and played for me.
You're kidding.
And it just, it was good. I mean, I remember it vaguely. It certainly wasn't the best performance, but I remember the look on everyone's face turning around and thinking, whoa, the new kid's been practicing. I remember a very warm feeling coming over me at that moment, like, wow, maybe I can do this.
Wow.
But yeah, that was the first time I think I really could say, I like playing an instrument, because before that, I was just going through the motions.
Amazing. So did you stay with the trumpet?
For a while. And then I migrated into the lower brass, and I've here and there I've played all the brass and all the major brass instruments, with exception of French horn. But yeah, I played tuba a lot in high school, a little bit of trombone, a little bit of baritone, and of course the trumpet.
This is so amazing. So how did you wind up at the piano?
That was another mistake. My grandparents bought my sister a piano for Christmas in 1999 because they felt that she should have a hobby because I was into building model rockets, and I actually took flying lessons at the time, believe it or not, with a friend of mine. They said, Jenna, my younger sister, she needs a hobby. She got it, and she's like, thanks. You really shouldn't have. She had no interest in music whatsoever. Now, of course, I read a little bit of music at the time because I'd been doing band.
And how old were you when this happened?
13 or 14. I don't know. Yeah, 14.
Okay.
So I've been playing in the band for a little over a year at this point, and I could read both clefs. And so slowly but surely, I'd kind of pick little things out since we had the instrument. And I remember thinking this is pretty neat. And the following year, about 15 years old, is when I really started taking it somewhat seriously and started composing.
At 15?
Mm-hmm.
Did you take lessons?
No, not at first. In fact, I did not take my first formal private music lesson until I was a freshman in college. And very much against my will, believe it or not. Now I look back and think, okay, dummy, what'd you do that for? I was very rebellious about the idea of private lessons because I was afraid it would tarnish what I had done myself.
Let's back up a little bit. So you're screwing around with the piano, mm-hmm. but in school you're playing all of the brass instruments.
Correct.
And are you playing in a band? I mean, besides school, are you playing around? Or
no, all solo.
All solo
at the piano. When it came to me playing the instrument, even out and about, it was always just me. And I would play for dinner parties, and I remember playing for a Rotary event at the Van Wezel and little things like that.
So what were you playing?
I was playing my own compositions. I was playing snippets of difficult classical pieces that I was trying to learn with all my heart. I would not play the easy stuff. Probably the first piece I ever sat down and really tried to work at with the music was the Pathetique Sonata by Beethoven, which anybody listening who knows classical repertoire is chuckling because it's a very difficult work, certainly if you're not a strong reader and for that matter, don't have any formal technique
training. Right. Okay, so do you remember when you thought, well, I'll make this a life?
Okay, so that moment, and that was the first time I smiled when you said, oh, the pivotal moment. The pivotal moment was 16, taking a chemistry test. And I remember I had not studied for this particular test. I was very good at chemistry. I loved it. I loved chemistry. I loved math. And I had this just epiphany over me. I was so distracted by music taking this test. All right, I was so distracted. I had my own tunes going through my head and thinking, oh, how am I going to work on this later? I need to make that section transition to that. And I got thinking, you are not going to be an aviator. You are going to be a musician. Because at the time, I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy afterwards and be a pilot. And definitely, I remember taking that chemistry test, and something just, boom, closed the book on my dreams of aviation and opened a new book that said, welcome to the very challenging world of the artist.
Right. Yes. You know, what's wonderful to me about this is, and I've never heard this before until I interviewed Dick Hamilton. He was, a junior or senior in high school, planning to go on to be an electrical engineer or whatever it was he was going to be. And he suddenly thought to himself, how am I going to study this stuff when all I can think about is the music in my head?
Love it.
Right. So apparently some of you get attacked in that way, you know? I mean, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Okay.
I love that you use the word attacked. Because really, that's what it felt as if I was attacked or I had an apparition of some kind.
Yes.
Over me.
Over
like a dark cloud, but one that was saying, it's okay, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah. You'll love
submit
it.
Submit yourself to the art.
Right, exactly. Give in.
Yeah.
So you know you're going to go to college and you're going to major in music.
No, the intention going to school was to be a music composition major, for sure. With, of course, piano being my principal instrument. I fell in love with the idea of creating new music. And I should put new in quotation marks because although it may be new, you're really, as a composer, and I was very much in denial about this at first, but being a composer is really doing your best to form a really gorgeous quilt of all these patches that you've taken with you your whole life. But you're really forming a mosaic of all these geniuses you've studied.
Yes, even if it has pieces mm-hmm. from other places, it's new and it's yours because you put it together.
Right.
And that's the thing that really captured you, the idea that you could do that.
Here, that's the thing, is that I've always known in my heart, ever since all this started, that no matter what you do, the desire to always write, you're never going to be able to quench. It's going to be one thing after another. Mm-hmm. Even after finishing something great, I hear something and, oh, that was fun. Okay, what's next? And I think that's the part that intrigues me about being a media composer. Because you really can't get married to one thing. Sure, someday I will score the music for a feature film, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to say, that was great. I want to see what's next. I'm hoping. I like working on many projects at one time. I graduated from Florida State with a Bachelor of the Arts in Music. I was told by the director there, if you have dreams to go to grad school, get your Bachelor of the Arts, get out of here, and then go pursue it. Now, of course, I thought I would have done this maybe after taking 6 months off, a year off. Well, no. Meeting the love of your life and getting married, and then a couple years later having a son, and that all happens very quickly. People warned me. They said time will fly. And time has never gone faster than since after my son was born.
Okay, so it's instead of going immediately, it's been 6 years, but it has been an extraordinary 6 years.
A wonderful 6 years of, on top of the marriage and having a kid, I have grown so much here. And I told myself I never would, but what did I know 10 years ago? I told myself, oh, you can't grow here. You need to move to New York right away. You need to move to... No. I owe so much to Sarasota.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I've really grown here. I never thought that I would do all the music directing I've done here, nor the arranging or the accompanying, because quite frankly, all through college, that never interested me. I thought to myself, I need to, although I did shows, I performed in shows, I never performed in pits, I never did music directing, but I was always on stage performing in college, and I never thought that I'd music direct.
So how did you get into that?
Right after I graduated and moved back to Sarasota, I started doing improv with Lazy Fairy. I was their pianist, and I very much have missed performing with them. Christine Alexander, the director of the Lazy Fairy Troupe, gave my number to Jeffrey Kinn at Sarasota Players, and he called me to music direct Spitfire Grill. And from there on, it was just networking in this lovely town, and of course I've done
everything.
Many shows since.
Yeah, you've done everything. You are everywhere.
I try to be. I try
yes,
to be.
Yes, you were.
Two places at once.
You were. Yeah. You were. And I know that you are the most responsible, the most easy to work with, the most charming, the most skilled person anyone could work with. So why wouldn't you be everywhere?
Well, thank you for that.
Okay. So you go through college, right? You get it's a BA?
Correct.
And then life picks you up, essentially. And how did you meet Jenny?
I met her through my best friend, who is now, of course, my brother-in-law. She was my best friend's sister. The first time we met was right after Ben and I, Ben Adams, her brother, we were doing Jesus Christ Superstar together at MCC. I wasn't really happy in college my freshman year. Although I learned a lot, I still had that wall up where I thought, oh, the education is going to ruin my creative ambition. So many times I want to walk back 11 years and smack myself in the face. But anyhow, I digress. I did Jesus Christ Superstar with Ben Adams. I played the role of Caiaphas, the high priest, and he was Annas.
Oh, wait a minute. You didn't talk about acting.
I took acting my senior year at Sarasota High School, and I did some things here and there. And
did you think you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, at one point. I wanted to be everything at some point. Definitely an astronaut takes second place to music. I wanted to do that for a very long time, up until I had that epiphany during
the chemistry
test. But yeah, I've always loved acting, and I acted in school plays, and I continued to do it here and there in college. But anyhow, I did Jesus Christ Superstar, met Jenny, his older sister. I was 20 at the time, she was 25. And now our 5-year age difference doesn't matter at all, but back then, 20, 25, okay, yeah, dude, you need to grow up a little bit. but truthfully, from both sides, there was never any real love interest. I'm sure we thought each other were cute, but
right.
I was her baby brother's roommate and friend, and that was that.
Right.
After I graduated college, I looked her up and invited her to come see a show of mine, and in less than a year, we got married.
So
hopefully, I would joke around with him, oh, someday I'm gonna date your sister, I'm gonna marry your sister, and he would say, she's out of your league. showed you, Ben.
Okay, so when did the idea about going to graduate school evolve?
I always knew that I would go back to graduate school. In fact, I really wanted to go to Tisch at NYU because I wanted to pursue musical theater composition. Still deep down, I would never, ever give up the film dream because that's ultimately what I wanted to do probably 30 seconds after I composed my first note. I really love the idea of being a film composer. So I knew I was going to go to graduate school, wasn't exactly sure when or where. But I knew I needed that break after graduating from Florida State, and of course I took it, and here we are 6 years later. Back in 2010, I started to get that, what shall I call it, a creative bubble coming to the surface again and thinking, it's time. It's been 2 years. But then I got thinking, no, this is just a timeline thing. I very quickly squished that. I said, no, I'm doing this because I just am angry that I haven't done it sooner, blah, blah, blah. I just want to leave Sarasota. I can't grow here. Wrong. Because I continued to grow here for the last 4 years. About a year and a half ago, I'm really starting to get the itch for real. Mm-hmm. It's not like 3 years ago. Now I need to go back to school. I need to get these tools. And I really feel like I need to follow that dream because I'm starting to think, what if I don't do it?
Yeah.
I got comfortable. I've been very comfortable. How could I not?
Yeah.
I don't have to look to work.
You have to decide which job to take.
Exactly. And it's been wonderful. I feel very blessed here. I'm very thankful for all the, you know, the hundreds of people who have helped me get to where I need to go because I've taken something from every one of them. But it was for real then. So, and I must say, my wife is probably the best web searcher I've ever met. And she stumbled across the Seattle Film Institute. I'd never heard of it. And we started looking into it, and it just seemed like a dream come true. It's a 10-month program. It's in a new, vibrant, young city. And the best part of all is that the guy I'm going to be studying with there, Hami Mann, wrote the music for one of my favorite movies in childhood, Robin Hood Men in Tights. And I thought, this has got to be a sign. I can't tell you how excited I am to start classes.
So just 10 months?
It's just 10 months, yeah. So we're going to be...
Are you coming back?
We like to... my family lives by the saying, if you'd like to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yeah, right.
Because you can try your hardest, but you really don't know what you're going to do. Like I said, I had it in my head in my last few months at Florida State. I'm going to move to Germany. I'm going to stay there a year, maybe two, maybe longer if I like it. And that's that. But something tugged my heart back home after 2 weeks. Something just wasn't right. And that was because my wife was waiting to meet me back here. Thank you, honey. Thank you for waiting.
Well, see, what I hear is this ability to recognize what is yours, despite the fact that it might not look like what you expected it to look like. When you're in its presence, you know. So you didn't have any interest in being in band, but when you had that experience with the trumpet, you understood that that was yours, mm-hmm. that called you and you answered it, right?
Right.
And the same thing with the chemistry test. You thought you were going to be an aviator or an astronaut, but you heard the call from yourself. So, the thing with coming home, it's all the same, is that you know how to listen to what's right for Bobby.
Right.
I think it's lovely and to be trusted. So, I'll put a plug in for you to come back.
My birthday is Tuesday. I'll be turning 29, and I will get my master's degree right before my 30th birthday.
Wow.
But I like that idea of the timeline thing. It'll be neat at that point to say I have my master's in film scoring, what I've wanted to do half my life. Kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah. And, I'm asking you where you think you might want to go after that, but what's clear about you is that this 10 months will be filled with examples of things that you could do, opportunities that you can't now anticipate. Just like my guess is you didn't expect to be married as young as you got married.
No, I wanted to get married at 50. No, I had a professor named Dr. Timpson my freshman year at USF. He looked at me in the eye one day and he said, get married when you're 30. He said, you'll know who you are when you're 30. But then again, I've always felt... And my parents have, too, and they're not biased at all. They've always felt I've been a little advanced. So 24, 30, whatever. I rounded up.
Right.
I rounded up from halfway there. I couldn't be more happy that I got married at 24.
No kidding.
Those are the things I talk about. It's like I can plan all I want, but My dad was the same way. My dad in 1982 could care less about meeting his wife.
Right.
But he walked in to buy a generator one day in northern Maine, and his jaw dropped, and here he is.
Wow.
32 years later.
So I think this is important. The idea that life can surprise you.
Yes.
That you aren't rigidly attached to either what other people say or even what you have decided, because when something better comes along, you'll take it.
Yes. I would say the quote, thorn in my side, is I can be very, very selfish. And I have no one to blame for that. I mean, there's just something within me. And, you know, quite frankly, I've been able to attribute a lot of it just to the whole arts thing. I mean, as an artist, we have the desire to create all the time.
Yes.
And
it's compelling.
Yes, it's compelling, and it's never convenient. I want to create when something else takes precedence. I want to do my work when I know my services are needed elsewhere.
Yes.
All right? And although I do realize that, hey, you're on a date with your wife. You're going to love and appreciate her. You're spending time with your son. You're going to love and appreciate. You are teaching. You are going to take your knowledge and your brain and flood little minds who are going to grow. Yes, I do that. But that desire to create is always there.
Yeah, I really think this is an important thing to say. It's one of the reasons I think that sometimes marriages don't work out for artists, because they don't have the awareness that you were just describing, that it's a choice, right?
Yeah.
I want this is so strong, is so powerful. I need to be putting this music down. I need to be painting this painting. I need to be practicing my dance move. I need to be doing that. It's so compelling. And at the same time, as you point out, if you're a human being in the world and you're in relationship with other people, there are other things that come up that they need from you, require from you, want from you, right? Mm-hmm. And it is, I think, the awareness that that's a tug of war.
Yes.
That allows you to sometimes choose one and sometimes choose the other, but not to ruin all your relationships.
Right. It's about making priorities and good time management. And quite frankly, my time management now, being the busiest, frankly, I've ever been in my life within the last couple years, is at its peak. Because I now know if I have an hour and a half set aside to compose, you get your butt in gear and you do it.
Right.
You don't go make a bologna sandwich. You don't take a break for 10 minutes to go watch a couple cartoons and come back. No, you sit there and you work your hardest. On the same token, when you have an hour and a half lunch date with your wife and you know you're not going to see her that evening because you will be playing Fiddler on the Roof until 12:30 a.m.
Right.
At musical theater, people get that joke, of course. Then your mind needs to be on her. You can't, and she's called me out of it. I love her. I mean, she knows me better than any human being has ever known me or will ever know me. We were on our anniversary dinner last October. Sitting there, eyes right on her.
Right.
She just stops her story.
Right.
I mean, on a dime. You're not here right now. Where are you? And you know what I said? I'm in Stravinsky's Rite of Spring.
Yes, yes.
And of course, and she had every right to get a little upset at that. I would have taken offense. I'm trying to tell her my dreams and ambitions and things that make me happy, or tell you about this movie that, or book that I loved. She got upset at that, and of course I apologize, but I really, it's more about, for me now, putting myself back in that place to when you're first dating, and everything that comes out of their mouth is like, music. They're singing to you. In fact,
yes.
In fact, it was as if she was singing La Boheme to me when we were dating. You know, oh, I want to hear. I want to know everything about you. And for everybody, and you're in complete denial if you disagree. But everybody, as time goes on and life becomes a little more routine, things become a little less interesting to you. But you are really, for a fundamental principle, is putting yourself back to that first love.
Yes.
For anything. I do the same thing for music.
Yes.
Anybody who loves anything, put yourself back to when you first loved it, and then you remember why you started off.
Yeah, this is so wonderful, I think. And it is, I think, the recognition that this is a choice. You know, I think a lot of people never get there. They are compelled by what they're compelled by. They never wonder, could I do this differently? Should I do this differently?
Right.
You know, but you have. And I think really this is what makes it possible for relationships to last.
Yeah.
You know.
The last thing I'd like to say on this topic is something I read in a biography about Ludwig von Beethoven, written by Ann Pimlott Baker. And oddly enough, I read this book for the first time at age 16. On my way to, most of it on my way to record that CD you're looking at right there, up in Alpharetta, Georgia. I read this biography, and at 16, I had highlighted a few things in the book that were interesting. And one of them, in the beginning of the book, said Beethoven never married because he always feared it would interfere with his art,
right.
Naturally.
Right.
At the end of the book, within the last few pages, I had also highlighted another sentence that said Beethoven's one regret was never marrying and never starting a family. And so it was almost like I warned myself of this at 16, because I had forgotten about it, and I picked the book back up last year and read it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so intrigued by the fact that I had highlighted those. I thought, what a great way to warn myself,
yes.
Because there's a lot of truth in that. And I've told my wife, Jenny, about this. There's certainly no secret here, that there's a lot of truth to, you know, what do you really love? You can't have your cake and eat it too. Okay, you're going to be an artist and do your thing, but you know yourself, Bob, you're going to get lonely,
right.
Blah, 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 need I say more, but, and certainly, like I said, being married and having a family, wonderful. When it comes to my art, yes, it's important because that's who I am, but it's about timing.
You know, I'm fond of saying you can have it all, you just can't have it all at the same time.
Yeah, there you go.
And that really is the crux of it, that when two things collide, when you want two things at the same time, that you recognize that you have to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to choose. And you can have them both. You just can't have them both right this second. Right this second, you're either there with your wife or you're there with Stravinsky.
One arm around
each other. Right. And the other thing that I think is so lovely about what you said, and I identify with it so strongly, you weren't intending to be with Stravinsky. He entered you without, you know, he didn't knock on the door and you said, yes, come in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's that apparition.
That's right. And
go
certainly,
away from me. You can haunt me later when it's my turn.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And certainly anybody who's married to an artist, and as a therapist, I treat a lot of couples where one is an artist and the other isn't, or both are artists, and there are big challenges for people who have been attacked by an art. You know, it's just the way it is. People whose job is something they go to, they leave there and they come home, it's not the same for people who have fallen in love with an art. It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really want to applaud you for that recognition, for that sensitivity, for knowing that sometimes you have to do something that doesn't feel like what you want to do in order to keep something you want.
Yeah.
Hmm? Yeah.
It's really the truth. And I'm sad that it took this long, but then again, if you look back, it was not long after my son was born that really it dawned upon me. This just quite frankly isn't fair. It dawned on me that you can keep doing what you're doing. You know, you can keep putting your priorities in the wrong places, but you're going to drive something away.
Right.
And don't let that be your family.
Right. That's right. And knowing that and choosing. Because apparently Beethoven made a different choice,
mm-hmm.
which he regretted, but it was a choice.
It was a choice.
Right, right.
He knew he obviously knew what he was doing.
Yes, right.
And that was probably a very, very difficult thing to deal with. And on top of that, he dealt with depression. I'm very lucky. And I feel very lucky that I'm realizing this now. We're moving to a brand new place. I'm going to more than likely have a very busy schedule, and I just feel so blessed that I understand, have not mastered, let's be careful with our words here, Bob, I understand good time management.
Yes.
That's what it's going to boil down to.
Well, and the other thing that you haven't actually said but have alluded to is that this is a conversation that your wife and you keep having.
Sure.
So that she's also part of the dynamic. She's not somebody who you choose to be with or don't choose to be with. She's an integral part of working this out.
Right.
It has to be joint, it seems to me. It can't be just you choose when you're in and when you're out, but it's a collaboration.
Correct.
Yeah. And in that way, you are lucky. You are lucky that you found somebody who wants to collaborate with this, you know?
Yes. Lucky is a very good word.
Yeah, I think you have. I think there's been a lot of luck in your life.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's great, and let's just keep it coming, because in this business, you need a little bit of luck. You need a lot of bit of luck. You really do. Talented and hardworking, it just isn't enough.
There
is too much of it out there, especially now in such a connected world with the internet. There's just too much of it out there. I know that I'm going to get heard by the right ears. I mean, it's a feeling I've always had within me. But yeah, certainly I think that a lot of that's going to be because of luck, not because of my skill. Because there are many people out there who can write circles around me. And I accept that.
Yeah, it is not always solely about skill and talent. There's no question about it. But if the past is any predictor of the future, you have a lot of terrific luck waiting for you.
Thank you.
And certainly, I and everyone else in Sarasota is pulling for you.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Thank you, and thank you, Sarasota.
So, music has been a through line for you since the eighth grade?
Yes. And define what you mean by...
That it's been important to you, that your life has been in some way about it?
Yes. I would say it's been important since 13. It's been an obsession since 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at first, okay, I'm in band, I'm playing music. 14, okay, I'm playing piano now, that's kind of cool. 15, wow, I can actually play a little bit of classical music, something I thought I'd never do. But 16, boom, that's when really the weight fell on my head and said, wake up, you're going to do this forever.
Yeah. Okay, so 16 to 29, what would you say about what it's like to be obsessed by music?
Some days it can be like a splinter in your thumb that you can't quite get out. It sits there and annoys you, but there's nothing you can do about it at the time. But most days it's really just probably the most infectious, wonderful curse you can have. Because I always hear music. And I'm always singing it, too. And it's not always my own stuff. No, more often than not, it is other people's work. It's a work by Beethoven. It's something from a film I just watched. It's clever lyrics by Cole Porter. And believe it or not, and this is no joke, I catch myself humming or singing your music from time to time. No joke.
Oh, my God.
And it's been 2 years.
Wow.
Plus. But once in a while, I catch myself humming Traveling Man.
Oh.
Which Way Is Out, the other day, in fact, Which Way Is Out came in my head. So there's a compliment for you. I haven't sat down and played your music in over 2 years, and still.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We banged it out a lot back in the day.
We sure
on the
did.
But still, the good stuff stays with you. And you've commented on making files in your brain. You think we make files in our brain. Well, certainly I have taken Under the Radar and put it in a dear file in the music section. Yeah.
I love it. I hope one day we'll do it again.
I would love to.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Me too. Thank you. So, speaking of show, let's talk about what you're going to do with Venice now.
Bach to the Future. It's a play on the title Back to the Future, the great 1985 film. And it's one part Bobby being nerdy, one part Victor Borga, one part play some serious classical repertoire because I love doing so, another part telling jokes, another part telling some interesting tidbits about music history. Although I say a lot of things that I feel are interesting, Not everybody cares that this was written in 1815. Not everyone cares that who was president in the U.S. at this time, or who was prime minister in England when Handel wrote the... Okay, who cares? But I truthfully am going to attempt to take us on a musical journey from the beginnings of music, that is, music of prehistory, before people even wrote things down.
Wow.
Until now, and furthermore, the future, because there will be a bit of improvisation in the show. So things that aren't even I'm not even planning on doing, a little bit of my music, and of course we'll hear some music by the great composers, these giants who we've put on pedestals throughout. But of course there will be a little bit of Bach, but I would say if you're really into serious classical music, this probably is not the program for you, because there will be a bit of that. But you will leave there disappointed if you're waiting to hear complete Brahms sonatas played to perfection.
No, we're going to hear Bobby Brader.
You're going to hear Bobby Brader in all his nerdiness and
all his charm and everything
he
knows.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yes, oh, please. Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so it's...
Sunday, August 10th at 2 p.m. and Thursday, August 14th at 8 p.m.
And are they going to be more or less the same, except for the fact that you don't do anything the same twice?
yes, correct. Mostly the same, but of course, like I said, there will be a bit of improvisation and even a tad bit of audience participation that will, of course, be different depending on the audience. But both the performances are at Stage 2 at Venice Theater and Pinky's Cabaret. Not a whole lot of space in there. I've been telling people to get tickets ahead of time, which you can do on the Venice Theater website.
Right. I'm looking forward to the concert. It feels a little bit like a loss that you won't be here.
It'll definitely be very bittersweet. Mm-hmm. It'll be like my last student recital that I had on May 18th. That was tough. Thinking like, oh, yeah, you know, just to watch the kids change And some of them have even started to move the way I move, which is kind of cool. Imagine it's kind of like a karate instructor watching someone start to kick the way they kick. Some of them have really began to move at the keyboard like I do and emote the way I do through music. So that was tough, and this will certainly be bittersweet because although I'm, you know, it won't be my final performance because actually I am doing the final show in the cabaret season with Jason Ellis and Caitlin Longstreet for their program. It will be my final solo performance in the area, probably for a long time, but then again,
you
who knows?
Never know. That's right.
Yeah, you really don't.
That's right. Well, Bobby, thank you very much for this.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it. When you listen to Bobby Brader, what you hear is what is there. The exuberant, the silly, the insightful, the thoughtful, the reflective. Everything that he is right there. When you listen to Bobby Brader, you hear Bobby Brader. And of course, it's the point that I am trying to make with The Lynn Show, that it is possible to be yourself, not to be second-guessing, not to be pretending or hiding or dissembling or worrying. You know, what is this? How is this going to go down? Is this going to cost me? And of course, we would not hide parts of ourselves unless we thought it was going to cost us in attention, affection. But what we don't realize when we're doing that is that when we hide parts of ourselves, it costs us. So it is my hope, as always, that when you were listening to Bobby, you asked yourself, am I like this? Am I present always? Am I myself in every situation? Am I worried that myself will somehow not go over well? Well, it is my hope that in listening to Bobby and to the other people that I interview, that you understand that it is possible to be yourself. I hope that you are planning to pursue yourself in the event that you have left some of yourself behind. I'm going to close the show by playing another early composition in his very first CD. And as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. as I said, inspiration to pursue yourself, perhaps. Maybe just enjoying Bobby, who is so delightful. Maybe it was listening to his music, which of course is also wonderful. Something that will bring you back, because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into